Hi, I'm Una Chaplin, and I'm the host of a new podcast called Hollywood Exiles. It tells the story of how my grandfather, Charlie Chaplin, and many others were caught up in a campaign to root out communism in Hollywood. It's a story of glamour and scandal and political intrigue and a battle for the soul of a nation. Hollywood Exiles from CBC Podcasts and the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Sam Smith's new album is called Gloria. There's a song on it called No God. There's a song on it called Unholy. So what's going on? Why is one of the biggest pop stars in the entire world thinking about spirituality? Sam Smith will tell you that answer coming up. Plus, Shania Twain, one of the best-selling artists of all time, period. Where she was in the late 90s and early 2000s in terms of like fame and success, not many people have reached that level. Harry Styles, who's a friend of hers, is kind of at that level now. And she says she has some advice for him. But when you hear it, you realize she's kind of talking to herself. Shania Twain is coming up. I'm Tom Power. You are listening to Q. Sam Smith is an important artist for a bunch of reasons. For one, their album In the Lonely Hour, which was their first album, by the way, just becomes this massive success and has those kind of rare songs that are impossible to avoid, like this one.
Oh, won't you stay with me?
So yeah, Stay With Me takes over the world. But Sam's also an important artist because in 2019, they post this Instagram caption and it says, "My pronouns are they and them, and they come out as non-binary." Now, I didn't know until this interview, actually, that Sam was sort of forced to do that because of a leak. And listen, they'll tell you that story. But you're about to hear Sam, and they're wearing a jean jacket. They're in a hotel room in New York chatting with me. And they're talking ultimately about how they learn to love themselves and why being allowed to be actually who you are, the thing it does most of all is it just makes you feel good. It makes you feel good about yourself. Here's my conversation with Sam Smith.
Well, I suppose the best way to start is to tell you how much I really love the record.
Thank you.
It's really,
that is the way to start.
It really is. It's absolutely beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
One of the ways I've heard you characterize it is it is perhaps a more joyful record intentionally. I wonder if you could talk to me about that.
Yeah, I feel like the first three records I made, well, the first two really, after In the Lonely Hour, I was dramatic. I was early 20s and I was speaking about heartbreak and unrequited love, and I loved it. I loved talking about it. I loved singing about it. I loved that that could be my thing. I felt like it became a little safe space to do that. But then when I got to like 25, 26, it felt easier to go into a studio and be really negative and talk about sadness. And this, the idea of being happy in a song or expressing a joyful emotion or a sexy emotion or an angry emotion felt really scary. And definitely after that break in COVID, that time of stillness, it made me think that I need to step into my fears a little bit and I need to write some music that shows different sides of me and who I am.
What was scary about showing joy?
I think as a queer person, to lean into the joy it can feel quite like radical sometimes. And what was scary was the way that I move my body when I'm joyful or the way that I dance. It felt doing that in front of thousands of people was always petrifying to me. I can do it in clubs. I can do it with my family. I can do it with boyfriends, stuff like that. But I guess there was a little bit of shame around the way that I moved my body when I was younger. But as I got older, I look fabulous.
It's funny. Yeah, you do. But I tell you what's funny, though, is that you would think that it would be the opposite. You would think that, like, to show sadness or vulnerability or longing or loss would be a lot of people would characterize that as the scary thing, you know.
You'd have to go back to my upbringing to understand why it's easier for me, because my dad is very emotional and my mum worked, my dad stayed at home. My dad cries. My dad feels all the emotions. My dad's very emotional and open about his emotions. So, you know, me and my family, it's quite wild the way we speak to each other. It's very, very vulnerable and sensitive. So other feelings like anger and like opinions in the way that I've put them across in Gloria, that they've always been quite scary to me.
It's lovely to hear that in that context, though. Can we talk about the Love Me More song?
Yeah,
which I think is first track one, right?
Yes, yeah.
And so the first words we hear on the record are, have you, I'm going to read your lyrics back to you. How do you feel about that? This is very, very comfortable for me.
I feel, you sound beautiful.
This feels very natural to me, by the way, reading your lyrics back to you. Have you ever felt like being somebody else, feeling like the mirror isn't good for your health?
Feeling like the mirror isn't good for your health. Every day I'm trying not to hate myself, but lately it's not hurting like it did before. Maybe I am learning how to love me more.
Now, as much as you want to, Sam, I'd love to hear, I guess I was curious about where you have to get to in order to write that song.
Mm. I had to get to a place of being comfortable in this concept that happiness and like a commitment to happiness is something that I have to work on every day for me. I struggle with mental health issues and I have OCD and I get sad and it can get heavy in my brain. And so every single day I have to practice, you know, saying nice things to myself. And it's got easier and easier over the years. I've had help and I've have amazing family and friends and practices and access to things that have helped me. And I have this toolbox now I can go to in my mind, which is wonderful. But I just wanted people to know in this album of joy that I'm making, I'm not in a place where I'm like happy forever and I'm just feeling good. It's a fleeting thing and it's something that I have to work hard on and always will have to work hard on.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like it when people preach this magic place you get to where everything's okay forevermore.
I remember I said to someone the other day, I said like, cause I had a bad day, I think last Monday, like a pretty low day. And I think it was just because I didn't get enough sleep. Like,
yeah,
I think I did like
yeah.
four. And I said to someone, I said, yeah. So what are you telling me? Are you telling me I got to balance sleep, booze, mm-hmm. exercise, meditation? Mm. Like, and if one of those, do you know what I mean?
No,
like,
totally.
If one of those things goes wrong,
yeah.
I'm
fucked. Oh, yeah.
Is
totally.
That what you're telling me? Really?
It's what it is, right? I remember someone saying to me once, like, we are just like massive babies. And sometimes we just need a sleep, a shit. Some food, a cuddle, a burp.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, really, like it's something you got to work on. So for you, it's something you got to work on.
All day, every day. You know, like I have OCD. So it's like I have intrusive thoughts all day, every day. Yeah. So it's like a real practice, and an upkeep. But I've got to a place where I'm balancing that and juggling that and actually getting to enjoy life a bit more, which is fabulous. Whereas before, I wasn't.
You're able to, all those things are paying off. All those things you're able to do, all the things the work you're doing is paying off and you're sort of communicating that in Love Me More.
Yeah, I was. And also, though, the thing with Love Me More, that song and having it as track one, it really was, you know, I feel like my career and the way that things have gone with my transitional period of time before this record, I understand how people may be confused with me as an artist, or fans of mine have been confused at times.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure. I'm confused as to what they might be, what you're referring to.
Me changing my pronouns, my last album, you know, like moving my sound in a different direction, stuff like that. And I feel like Love Me More was the last opportunity and for me to extend my hand, and even the sonics of the song, they nod towards the older sound. And it's a chance to explain to people in a kind way where I'm at and ask them to come along, because where I take them on this album is a very slutty place. And it can be quite a challenging place with some of the songs and the spaces we get to. So I wanted to start the album in a kind way, a welcoming way, a warm way, yeah. and say that we're going to have some fun.
Every day I'm trying not to hate myself, but lately it's not hurting like it did before. Maybe I am learning how to love me more, just a little bit, love me more, just a little bit, love me more.
So for the people who, maybe haven't visited Sam Smith since Dancing with a Stranger or since Stay With Me or something like that, you're going to get a different, thing here.
Yes.
It's going to be a little different. It's going to be a little, I want to say ribald. Like it's going to, is that ribaldry? It's going to be a little slutty.
Naughty.
Naughty. Yes. Naughty. But in all seriousness, the track one is, I want you to know that all these things you're about to experience are happening because the person you're hearing and the person you care about loves themselves.
Yeah, yeah, that's totally. Lovely. That's beautiful. It is. And also that I'm good. I'm good. And I'm, I actually needed to tell myself that after the years I had of what I went through, you know, and because it was tough and I had to, it took a lot of courage to get to the place I'm at now.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, you don't have to talk about this too much, but I would think that the amongst the toughness, that coming out as non-binary would give you some of that goodness or kindness that you were looking for. Would I be right?
Oh, 100%. It changed my mind. It's. I feel like the conversations around it are so intense, and there's like culture wars and stuff, and it's you know, these chats about language, and it's so insane. But the joy and the positives that have happened to me in my life are just wild. And I think that's really what I wanted to share with this music, was to make people aware that because of that slight change in language around me from my family and friends, I feel so safe and so able to share this part of my artistry that's just so wonderful, you know. I feel free as an artist, I feel free as a person, and it's been nothing but goodness, you know.
One, everything I want is everything you've got, so not before you come over, relax, what before you run, your eyes on my gun, dun, 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 I need you to come.
I'm Tom Power, you're listening to Q, and I've been talking to Sam Smith about their new album, Gloria, why they're prioritizing joy from now on, and how coming out as non-binary in 2019 really changed their life.
Give me what I want.
But to be fair to you, it's not just your friends and family. Friends of mine who have come out as non-binary or have come out as trans or even just come out as queer, it would be more of a private thing. They would tell their friends and their family. Yeah. Can you speak to what it is, I guess, what it is like or what happens when you also have to make a public, that it's such a public thing?
Yeah. You know? Well, mine was a weird one. I don't know if I've have spoken about this before, but I sent messages to people privately to do it privately, and somehow it got out.
I didn't know.
Was really, really a shame. And I had to make a statement because something was going to come out anyway. So I decided to make a statement. And to be honest, I've been living my life quite openly, I guess, publicly since I was 20 years old. And I've made loads of mistakes along the way and overshared and felt the repercussions of that. So I was able to deal with it fine, and also I think it's nice that I've been able to share the position I'm in with other people, so they can see what it's like and how the transitions into that will look like, and I'm not afraid of that. But it was definitely challenging at times, you know. I've really learned to not read comments now, which is fabulous.
You've learned to stay away from
it. I can stay away from it. So now I'm like, I'm releasing this album now, and it's like I'm not as nervous before, because I know I'm not going to be reading what other people think. It really is just about how I feel. Am I happy with it? And if I am, then great. Put it out. Let's write something else.
Is that a you take the phone and tell me how it's going? Or is that like, I'm not going to scroll down? I'm not going to scroll down.
That's like,
I'm not going to press the comments button.
Not going to do it. But also, I tell my team now, just send me the good news.
I love that.
Just send me the good stuff.
Can I get that?
I'm so hard on myself. As like, I think all artists, all of us, right? We're all so hard on ourselves. That I don't need to hear anymore, you know, I didn't need to hear negative things.
Well, because the story seems to me, like up to like the way we've been talking, is that the story I'm hearing is we go through some stuff, we hit a place where people expect me to do something, and then I do something different.
Mm.
And Unholy is like that. Mm. By the way, Unholy is unbelievable.
Thank you.
Like, it's unbelievable. It's like the biggest song in the world, too.
It's wild.
Isn't it?
It's really wild. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. What I'm so happy about is that people, you know, the only other experience I've had like this was Stay With Me.
Yeah.
And I think that not everyone who has listened to Stay With Me has come along for the journey through my album process, for album 2, 3. And so some people would have just heard Stay With Me and then they just hear Unholy. And that excites me because I am not one thing. I am not one type of artist. You know, if I was to explain me as an artist, as a musician, or the type of artist I want to be, I would be talking about Madonna and Rihanna and people like this, because I love changing things up and I love taking risks. And just when I think I've figured something out, I throw it away and rip it up and do something completely different. And in my albums, I think you can hear that, because I never stick to one genre. And that's what I love about Unholy.
Dirty, dirty boy. You know everyone is talking on the scene. I hear them whispering about the places that you've been and how you don't know how to keep your business clean.
But is that hard? Like, is there a moment? I'm imagining a moment in my head where it's like Team Sam Smith, and you're at the table, and you have, I know it wouldn't be this, but you have like a CD player in front of you, and there's a big boardroom full of people who work either for you or you know, work on the label and stuff like that, you know? And they're going, okay, what are they going to play for us today? And you go like, all right, I know you think you know me, but check this out. And it's Unholy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what I have. And they're going like, what? You know, this is not, even they, I wonder if they were even a bit surprised.
It was like that, but imagine that like dragged out over a year. So it was, I have to admit, I was tired. By the time that song came out, I was really tired, because the amount of pushing and that song took was a lot. And, you know, it's understandable. It was a risk for everyone. And people didn't get it. People didn't understand it. Some of the most important people in my life told me it shouldn't have been on my album. And it was this beautiful moment as an artist where it wasn't up for debate. There was just something inside me that was like, this is amazing. I love it. It's not about that I think it's a hit or I think it's number one. It wasn't about that. It was about that it makes my body feel different, and it makes me proud of what I do, and it's a powerful song. So I really, the music was the leader throughout this whole process, and I had doubts, but the music kept dragging me and pushing me, and yeah, it was a wild experience.
You were right.
I was right, but I'm also wrong sometimes, you know what I mean?
But so, you were right with this one.
I was right with this one, yeah, I was.
Let me just say how right you were. So it's Grammy nominated, Unholy is Grammy nominated for Best Duo Group Pop Performance. It received 22, yes, have a drink of water. It received 22 million streams in its first 2 days. I think the other day I looked at it, it had like 680 84 million streams.
God.
You and Kim Petras make history as the first openly non-binary and trans artist to hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100. It is sort of the biggest TikTok song in the world at the same time. I mean, just broadly, what does that mean to you?
It's mad. It's mad. It'll leave me breathless hearing these things. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. Do you know what is so lush is you just hearing that, and it was just so fun to do. Do you know what I mean? Like, the song was so fun to make, and sharing this moment with Kim has felt really special. We've got on so well. It's this genuine, beautiful friendship that's blossomed, and being in the studio, like, I don't know, it just feels so right. I'm so happy. I'm so happy, like, if this is the only song that people ever hear again from me, I'm happy.
It's a great song.
I really love it.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
I wanted to talk about the interlude, one of the interludes on the record, which was called Hurting.
Yeah.
And I heard the sample, or heard the recording, and I did some digging around, right? Because I don't have the liner notes or anything like that. I just had the waves, right?
Yeah.
So what I found was, I think, a film from 1970 called Gay and Proud.
Yes.
Which was a film about 1 year after Stonewall.
Mm-hmm.
The effort, I mean, a lot of stuff happened, but to distill it, there was an effort to take the queer liberation movement into the streets and out of spaces and more into the streets and more into everyday people's lives. And the quote, and I'll read this, having to lie is the saddest and ugliest part of being a homosexual. This is what the person says that you sampled.
Having to lie, I feel, is the saddest and the ugliest part of being a homosexual. When you have your first bad love experience, for instance, and you can't go to your brother or your sister and say, I'm hurting.
It's so intense. It's so sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so sad.
Why did you want to include that?
I chose it because it comes before a song on the album called Lose You, which is a song that was inspired by one of my friends who went through a breakup at the time that I was writing the song. And she was heartbroken. And It triggered a conversation in the studio for me about that first heartbreak, you know. And I think for everyone, your first heartbreak is horrible. But I really do think for queer people, it's exceptionally painful because you don't experience these relationships in school. You don't have those maybe you do now, which is such a wonderful thing, you know, with like these amazing Netflix shows I'm seeing. It's so beautiful to think that kids in school could be having these open, lovely, queer relationships.
Yeah, but...
But in the past, you haven't been able to and you've had to hide. And, you know, even when you get to become an adult, you love someone, you have to hide and you have to lie. And I think it's just incredibly painful. And I think that a lot of the pain of being a queer person can come out when you're heartbroken. And I think it definitely did for me in my first big heartbreak. And when I heard that quote, it was actually a news anchor said it on the first ever Gay Pride. And his voice in it is really monotone the way he says it. And I find it really haunting. But I just never heard it said like that. And I think it's so true. I think it's so true. Being forced to lie is a horrible thing.
When you say that was sort of my experience with my first heartbreak, because I also want to talk about it in terms of, like, how many people were in your town growing up?
Oh, I grew up in a village.
Yeah, how many?
I was the only guy in the village. It was, I don't know how many.
A couple of thousand, right?
Yeah, maybe, yeah, maybe. Like really small. There was just a pub, not a shop.
And I know. That'll tell you something.
Yeah.
And I suppose that quote gave me pause to that. I'm perhaps embarrassed to say I never thought about that before, that you have to hide your first heartbreak. Yeah, so I wanted to talk about that in the context of a small being from a smaller place.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
so that was your sort of experience as well.
Yeah, I mean, I actually didn't really have my first boyfriend until I was like 22.
Yeah.
So I was.
But Heartbreak doesn't have to be a boyfriend.
No, either. I mean, this is what my first album was actually in the Lonely Hour. I think that this is the beauty of music, right? People will hear it and they'll hear stories or songs and. You know, like my song "Stay With Me" that people play at weddings, but it's about one night stand. It's not about that. But I love that they can play at weddings. So music, I'm not dissing this because music is beautiful and how it does this. But in The Lonely Hour, my album was about me being in love with a straight man and how nothing happened. We didn't kiss each other. We didn't do anything. I was just completely infatuated with him. And that was my first experience of love growing up in school and fancying anyone. I was in love with these straight guys and I would just imagine what it would be like to be with them in my mind. And I think a lot of queer people go through that. And if you listen to my first album with that in mind, it's, you know, I think a lot of people think that I came out after my album, weird stuff like this, but it is from a queer perspective. And I think that that album just shows that it's, yes, my music's from a queer perspective, but my music is for everyone and everyone's felt those feelings. You know, even if you're not queer, you know, everyone feels unrequited love in school and those moments and throughout their lives.
When did you figure out you were good at singing?
I don't know if I ever figured it out. I was told.
I can tell you. Do you want me to tell you now?
No, I was told.
I can tell you.
I was told when I was like 8. My dad noticed me singing in the car and then sent me to sing.
What were you singing? Do you remember? Do you any idea?
Chaka Khan, always, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or Whitney or Mariah or George Michael. Big voices.
And he says to you, "You're I think you got something."
Yeah, he said, they'd say you're good. And then they sent me to my singing teacher. And then she said I was good. And then I was just pushed to sing in front of people. And I did enjoy it, but also I was petrified all the time. But I did notice that when I would sing, people would listen. And it was a crazy feeling. It was nice, actually, because I was so bad in school at everything else. And I was so, like, I wasn't naturally, like, the smartest kid or, like, you know, I was awful at sports, all this stuff. So it was nice to be good at something.
And then you have to make the decision, I suppose, that, like, hey, this thing that I'm good at, I'm going to make it my life. I'm going to make it my job.
Yeah. That happened really young. It was very odd. I wonder sometimes if my OCD is, like, mixed in with it because I was very focused from, like, the age of 12. I remember, like, planning my career out, like, of what I would do.
What did it look like then?
It was, at 12 years old, it was musical theatre.
Okay.
I was like, I'm going to be in musical theatre. I'm going to, you know, train really hard in some sort of college that I'd get into, and then I'd be in the West End, and eventually, hopefully, maybe one day Broadway.
All right.
But then when I hit 13, 14, I just realised that all the parts I wanted to play were actually female parts, and there wasn't a lot of, like, parts for me. That's when I'm about 14 years old. I my original singing teacher is a singer-songwriter, jazz singer, and I just go and see her do shows, and I just fell in love with this idea that I could travel the world and write songs.
Because when does the Latch thing happen? When does Latch the? I should say for people. Yeah. Let me catch people up. You're introduced to the world in a song called Latch by Disclosure, 2012.
Yes.
You didn't even have an album out at that point.
No, I was 19.
And that's everywhere. So that must give you a glimpse of, like, oh, this can actually get pretty big.
Yeah, well, that was, like, the beginning of, like, that after Latch, it was just, like, straight away. It was, like, in the space of a year, I was working in a bar, and then I was touring around the world.
How long after that did Stay With Me happen?
like a year and a half after Latch. Like it was very, all very, very quick.
Guess it's true, I'm not good, I don't understand. But I still need love, cause I'm just a man. These nights never seem to go to plan.
What's a really good thing about it happening that quickly? And what's a not so good thing about it happening that quickly?
I think a good thing about having it quickly is that I got to stop working in a bar really fast.
Yeah.
It was almost like, it was like, I remember I was like cleaning toilets one day and then like 4 weeks later I was given my notice in. So that was stunning.
Fine.
That was fine. Yeah, I enjoyed that. I got to, and I could start paying my rent properly, which was nice. And the negative was that I think that the negative was that I was young and I hadn't experienced some really key things that I needed to, like boyfriends, properly going out, meeting queer friends, stuff like that. So I had to, I've had to do that whilst being well known, and you know, the dynamics in your relationships change when you experience fame. So dealing with that at 19, 20 was tough.
Yeah. You don't get to actually experience the things you're writing about.
No, but you do experience really adult things. It's wild, and there's so many amazing things that you experience. So I do think that as queer people, you grow up a little bit later in some ways.
Yeah.
In terms of like romantic experiences and friendships and things like that. So yeah, it was just a catching up with itself. But I hit 30 last year, and I really feel like everything's caught up, which is fab.
We're running short on time, and I wanted to ask you something, but I want you to tell me if this is a little too personal, perhaps right. Not in the way you might expect.
Go for it.
So the record's called Gloria.
Yes.
There's a song called Unholy.
Yeah.
There's a song called No God, which, mm-hmm. by the way, is not about there being no God, but it's about, you know, someone who...
God complex.
Yeah. You're not exactly... You're not everything you think you are. Mm-hmm. And then there's the song Gloria, which starts not with your voice, mm. but with I believe a choir.
Mm-hmm.
I know from reading that Gloria is also like sort of someone you can take on, mm-hmm. when you need to be brave.
Mm.
But Sam, I see a
pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know you grew up in the church. You grew up Catholic, I think. Mm-hmm. I guess, where are you? With listening to all that, I couldn't help but wonder, like, where are you spiritually?
Course.
Now.
I'm not religious personally. I'm more of a spiritual person.
That's what I'm, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that what I've noticed, it's weird because it's not an intentional thing, but what I've noticed is these big feelings in life that I feel. There's certain words I go to because of my upbringing and the places I've been in.
What do you mean?
Like words like Gloria and God and praying and all these things. They've come up in my music, and the first time I ever heard the word Gloria would have been Gloria in Excelsis Deus, yeah. in the hymn. But then Gloria is also what I hear in the gay bars. That's amazing song by Laura Branigan, Gloria. And you've got Gloria Estefan, and Gloria Gaynor,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so that word Gloria became a really mixed, it's a mixture of things for me. And I do think there's power within me rewriting what those words mean to me.
Is there more spirituality in, not more religion, is there more spirituality in your life, the better you feel?
Yes, actually. And for me, Gloria, this album, you know, there's a faith that's returned in my life, for sure. Even like just looking up at the moon or the stars sometimes now, I feel like I've regained a little bit more faith in the world.
In something,
you know, and I do feel like it's a key part of feeling better within yourself and within your body. I lost faith for a minute, and it was, and life felt a little bit hopeless, and now I have a bit more faith back in my life. Not religion for me,
of course.
Personally, and there's no judgment at all.
No.
But for me, it's just faith that everything's going to be okay. And I call that feeling Gloria.
It's an absolutely beautiful record.
Thank you.
When you look back at everything that led to it, what are you most proud of looking back on this journey you've been on?
Oh my gosh. What I'm most proud about, and it's something that I really want to drive home, I've realized that the key to feeling better is asking for help. And the key for your album sounding better is asking for help. And it really just does take a village in life. You know, we need each other. And I'm excited. It's almost like my musical theater roots have come back a little bit. And I'm so excited to like have dancers on stage. And I want to feel, you know, like I'm part of a chorus line. And I'm excited about that in the future for my music.
I'm a big believer, and I've read a lot about this, that by offering love to ourselves, we are in effect offering love to everybody else. Mm. And I feel so much love from you.
Oh, thank you.
Off this record.
Thank you.
And I mean it. And I do appreciate your time today. And thanks for making the time for us.
Thank you.
God love you.
You're beautiful.
Thank you. Oh, sorry, you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
So I want to play you the song Sam was just talking about just then, now that we sort of know the story behind it or the context behind it. This is Sam Smith's new song. It's called Lose You.
You say you're packing your bags. This isn't what I thought forever would be. You're walking out so casually. How could you give up on us like that? You say you're feeling the pressure and you'll be better.
Sam Smith and Lose You from their new album, Gloria. That interview with Sam Smith was filmed in New York, so it's up on YouTube now, A Q with Tom Power on YouTube. It's floating around, clips of it on our Instagram and our TikTok too. Thanks so much to Sam Smith for making the time. Their new album is called Gloria, and it's out now wherever you get your streaming done. Shania Twain has spent the last few years wondering what happened. Like, how do you go from living in Timmins, Ontario, singing in lounges, looking after your siblings after your parents die in a car crash, to becoming the biggest singer in the entire world for a few years and then, like, losing your voice? What happens to you when you go through something like that? Shania Twain is here to talk about her new song. It's called Last Day of Summer. It's an excellent song, and we are going to listen to it, and she's going to talk about it. So the part of this conversation I think you're going to find really interesting is Shania Twain talks about the advice she would give Harry Styles, like a good friend of hers who is currently one of the biggest pop stars in the world. And you realize she's talking to herself. Here's my conversation with Shania Twain. Hi, Shania. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
I always love talking to you. Are you holding up all right? Everything good?
I am. I'm doing great. Got my tea and you, and here we go.
Yeah, you got your tea and you. That's a song right there. I hear my understanding of the record is that it is you being quite, the word that keeps on coming up is unapologetic.
Yeah. I'm in a very unapologetic spirit. And, you know, I would say I would include words like just feeling very liberated. I've liberated myself of a lot of weight and fears. I wrote the album during COVID. So I used my imagination to escape it and to change my frame of mind. So I ended up writing a very self-empowering, happy, uplifting album. A lot of that kind of music. So being unapologetic about what I feel and want to say is the start of all of that. And taking charge of lifting my spirits was the whole exercise. So
I mean, it sounds like what you're saying there, and I can relate to this, is that you, if you're going through a dark time, if you're going through a challenging time, you can write songs and you can write art that is reflective of that challenging time, quite melancholy and sad, and that can do some stuff for sure. But you can also write positive and happy and songs that are, as you mentioned, unapologetic. I'm going to get through this. Even if you don't feel that way, writing the songs can help you feel that way.
Well, your imagination, if you unleash that, and now that's the first step of liberation, you know, thinking and reflecting on the possibilities that are ahead. And then the options that you have in the moment, which is, okay, let's just imagine that I'm in a great mood, or let's imagine. I mean, I think if you therapeutically, you can think yourself into a state of mind. Mm. And that's what I did. I was just like, okay, what kind of music, what kind of lyrics makes me want to dance? What would I say out loud that would make me laugh, that would make me smile? And so these are the songs that came out of that exercise.
It's a question I wanted to ask you. I feel a bit weird about asking, but I'm going to do it anyway. I had a question about the Coachella thing with Harry Styles, which is that, so famously, Harry Styles brings you up on stage during Coachella. It becomes, quite a big viral moment. And it was really wonderful to see. And I think actually still very proud as a Canadian to kind of see that sometimes, to be honest. Not many people have gotten to that level of stardom that you have and that he is sort of approaching or is living in right now. Did you give him any advice on how to navigate any of this?
No, I think if he would have asked me for advice, I would have been very happy to give it. We have a very just friendly, easy communication. I tend to be very nurturing anyway. I'm sure that I probably act more like his aunt or something in his presence.
Yeah.
I know that he's working really hard and he's being super professional. I see myself in him. He takes care of his voice. He's resting between things. And he seems to be really navigating very well, but I know that it's work and I know that he's, it's a big effort. Yeah, for sure.
Well, what's the advice you would have given him? You said, you know, had he asked me for advice, I would have been happy to give it to him. What would you have said?
Well, I would say, take care of you. I've gone through so many phases in my life and in my career, and I've gone through phases of, resenting even my successful status at times, resenting being so loved by fans, not meaning that I didn't really feel deserving. There were some confusing years where I wasn't focusing enough on my own well-being and I was exhausted. I was not thinking always very clearly. I was trying to give, because I couldn't even believe that I was making it. I was giving more than I actually had. And, you know, to make the most of it. But there's, I like to use this example because, you know, on the plane they say, put the oxygen mask on your child before you put it on yourself. I mean, sorry, put it on yourself before you put it on your child.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I first saw that message, I thought, I would never do that. I would put it on, I would save my child first. But if you save yourself, you're more likely to be able to save your child and anyone else maybe around you. You're no good to anyone if you can't save yourself. So self-preservation is very important. And I would tell them that.
Well,
no, put the oxygen mask on yourself first.
I'm going to get banned from Canada if I don't wrap up this interview with you because they're going to kill me. I'm going to lose my passport. But I can't do it without getting you to set up the song that you're actually here to set up. So we're going to go off on one of the tracks from the record. We're going to choose you chose the song. We're going to go out on one of the tracks from the record. It's called Last Day of Summer. Tell me about this song. Tell me why this is the song that's meaningful to you.
This song makes me look back at my youth and new love and that feeling of that beautiful feeling of desperation when you are just getting up the courage to dive in and then it's time to get back to reality and it never happens. It's just a beautiful cliffhanger feeling that I wanted to write about, and that's Last Day of Summer.
Shania, thanks for being here.
And I hear that congratulations is in order for the relaunch of Q.
Oh, yeah. Very exciting. Very exciting. So you know in this business, it's so rare for anything to happen because things are going well. Normally things change and things are going poorly. So it's so nice to have like the interviews did so well. They just wanted me to do the interviews. So it's great. I couldn't be happier about it. You a big part of that. That last one you and I did, the one after the documentary, like blew up. Like that blew up here in Canada.
Well, I'm glad. I'm very happy for you. Congrats, really.
I'm going to, Shania, I'm willing to give you 10% of everything I have to say.
I think you're funny, you think I'm smart, 'cause I can name the planets all by heart. Oh, almost touching, but too shy to start. Eyes wide open, it's way past dark. It's too late to sleep now. The valley's wide awake, the early train's pulling out. Too hard to come down. It's the last day of summer and the first kiss on my lover's mouth. Did you get married or did you wait? Did you ever build that house down by the lake? Nights to find me lying awake. 'Cause every time I close my eyes, I see your face. It's too late to sleep now. The valley's wide awake, the early train is pulling out. Too hard to come down. Was the first kiss on my lover's mouth. Oh, the last time we were together's the first thing I remember. Every time September comes. Oh, but it's too late to sleep now. It's the last day of summer and the first kiss on my lover's.
That's Shania Twain and her new song, Last Day of Summer. Her new album, Queen of Me, is out later this week.
All right, that is it for the show today. Tomorrow on the show, Sarah Pauly will be here to talk about her incredible new film, Women Talking, which has picked up a couple of Oscar nominations. We're also going to talk about, you know, being a child star and then having child actors on your set. If you want to get in touch with me, we're at q@cbc.ca. On Instagram, I'm at Tom Joe Power. Thanks for tuning in for our first show back. We'll see you soon, later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.